live on the Fan all over D.C. and in Richmond, Odyssey app all over the country, and on video streaming on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page. We're Grant and Danny with the local football team having a bright future, their new quarterback. It's time for you to plan for your future as well. The exclusive sponsor of our show can help. The law firm Kondorian Murad will update your last will and testament, set up a trust for you and your family, schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today. Visit kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. You'll get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. We are preparing for Thursday night football and the kickoff of week three of the NFL season tonight. And to help us get ready for the game, Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports joins us now. Frank, what have you made of the New York Jets, the hosts tonight, so far this season?
It's been just tough scheduling-wise for them early on. Look, you go on the road, your first game with your quarterback who has played four snaps in, you know, 20 months or whatever it was, and you have to play the San Francisco 49ers on the road on a Monday night. Like, that's really tough. You come back, you play a road game the next week on short rest. So, yeah, they didn't look great against the Titans, but I kind of gave them a pass for that. And now you come back and you play a Thursday night game. So I don't think we're even going to find out much tonight. I think they've looked fine. I don't know. I don't know a lot about the Jets right now. They're not throwing it downfield too much. You wonder if that's Aaron Rodgers. You wonder if that's just what defenses are giving them. You wonder if it's just going to take a while for everything to click. They've just been such a weird scheduling spot all season long so far, including tonight, that I don't know if we've really seen the Jets' true talent level yet and what they're going to be.
Rodgers is obviously rusty. He's also old, though.
Yeah.
I mean, how long is it going to take him, do you think, to knock off the rust? Because I thought specifically against Tennessee, even though the numbers were better, like, he missed a bunch of throws he'll be making in a month, hopefully.
I would think so, too. We're not going to get the Aaron Rodgers of even 3 years ago, who was, you know, still in MVP contention. I can't believe that Aaron Rodgers at age 40 coming off that injury is ever going to be that level again. But can he be a good, competent quarterback? Yeah, I think so. Look, I picked them to come out of the AFC this year and represent them in the Super Bowl because their defense was amazing. And they have offensive talent. They rebuilt their offensive line. The only variable for them really was Aaron Rodgers. Can he play at a good level? I didn't need him to play at a great level for the Jets to be a good football team. Just be good. Be 12th to 15th best quarterback in the NFL. And I still think he can get there. Like you said, he is rusty. He is working with a new set of teammates. It's a whole different situation for him. It's almost like his first year there. So I'm willing to give them a pass for what has happened. But as long as they keep winning, like, you can't, these excuses run hollow when you lose a home game to the Patriots tonight, if that happens, you know, like, as long as you keep winning and you're 2-1 dealing with these issues, it's a lot easier than, you know, 1-2 and the sky's falling.
Frank, I want to ask you about the Patriots. I wasn't a particularly good student, which will probably surprise none of our listeners. And I remember the look my Spanish teacher in eighth grade gave me when I got a question right, like answered a question in a full Spanish sentence. It was like out of nowhere. That's kind of how I'm looking at the Patriots. I thought it'd be them and Carolina vying for like among the worst teams ever assembled. Like, they wouldn't be able to get out of the huddle without spiking themselves and it'd be a disaster. They very easily could be 2-0. I've been really impressed given my expectations were so low.
Yeah, I think we need to give Gerard Mayo a ton of credit. They're playing hard for him. They're playing well. They know what they are. They're playing within themselves. I mean, they're not trying to ask Jacoby Brissett to drop back 35 times. You know, I mean, they're really managing the game well. A lot better. I thought they'd be awful. Like, I was talking, you know, the couple weeks before the season started, I was looking at their schedule saying, you know, 0-17 is not impossible here. I don't think it's going to happen, but look at the schedule and tell me which wins you come up with. They play really well against the Bengals, a huge upset. And then last week they played well enough to win. They just didn't. I mean, Seattle got them at the end. I think Seattle's going to be a really good football team. So, yeah, just a ton of credit to Gerard Mayo, who I didn't know. It was impossible to know what Mayo was going to be as a head coach, and he was taking over for perhaps the greatest coach of all time. So I just thought that he would struggle a little bit, you know, early on as a rookie, as a guy who's never been a defensive coordinator. But I think that if you're the Patriots right now, as we sit here today, I think you feel pretty good about elevating him to be your head coach and where things are going with him. And we'll see. I mean, it's still early on. It's only two games. But I think he is, you know, so far to this point showing he could be a pretty good NFL head coach for this team.
Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports, with us here on G&D. When do we see Drake May?
I just don't know. I thought it was going to be like a week or two. You know, like, okay, well, it's not going to work with Jacoby, and they're going to have to make the move. But I think the counter to that, though, like, Jacoby's played well. But part of the reason May's not playing is because they were obviously worried about the situation around him. Well, situation around it doesn't look that bad anymore, does it? Like, their offensive line's playing a lot better than I thought it would. Ramondre Stevenson's running the ball. So your excuses for not starting May are kind of not valid anymore. So I do think we see him at some point this year, but I do think it's going to be a while because I think Jacoby's playing well enough. He did not play well in the preseason, and so credit to him for really playing well when the regular season started. But he's playing well enough that they don't have to make that switch, and I think in a perfect world, the Patriots would like for May to sit as long as possible and still get, you know, a little taste of the NFL by the end of the year.
Frank Schwab on Grant and Danny. I think picking a winner for a survivor pool this week is really, really complicated and hard. Is there anybody that you really like in that regard?
Cleveland? I haven't given up on Cleveland being a good team, and I have given up on the Giants being a good team. So I think that one definitely stood out to me. There's another one, too. Tampa, I don't, I'm based in Colorado, and this Broncos offense is a nightmare right now. It is just bad. Like, they cannot move the ball. They're not going to have a functional offense for a first half of the season. I think Bo Nix will be fine eventually, but you're asking the sixth quarterback drafted in his rookie class to start day one. That was just tough, no matter who your coach is. So, yeah. But your survivor pools this year have been awful. Like, I mean, week one, Cincinnati loses, and then last week, pretty much everybody except the Chargers lost. If you didn't have the Chargers, you're done. So, yes, it is hard to even just pick one winner in the NFL. Pick a straight-up winner this week. It has been difficult. That kind of speaks to how crazy and unpredictable this season has been so far.
Yeah, the biggest underdog in the league has won outright in week one and in week two. By the way, Washington right now is the biggest underdog in week three in Monday Night Football against Cincinnati. So maybe that means the Commanders will knock off the Bengals in primetime and Cincinnati will fall to 0-3. You mentioned Bo Nix, so I actually want to follow you down this rabbit hole on the rookie quarterbacks. We're happy here because Daniels, if you add in the running, has clearly been the best of the three of the rookie QBs that are playing. But Caleb Williams has been dreadful. Bo Nix has been really bad. Like, what are your thoughts on trouble in paradise with those other two guys and just how long it could take to get going?
Yeah, C.J. Stroud screwed up things for everybody. Now everybody thinks that, oh, Caleb Williams is just going to be a 4,000-yard passer on day one. It doesn't work like that for most guys. C.J. Stroud is just different. He was just unbelievable as a rookie. Most rookie quarterbacks struggle. And even C.J. Struggled early last season. It took him 2-3 weeks to get things going. So, I mean, in Chicago's case, I think that Caleb is just falling into bad habits he had last year at USC. The offensive line in front of him is not good in Chicago, but he's got to get rid of the ball. Like, I mean, that coaching staff has to drill into his head, look, three steps and out. Like, we're not trying to run around and do everything, because that play you might have made against Washington State last year, well, there's going to be three Texans defenders there when you try to heave it downfield to Cole Kmet and they're going to pick it off. This is the NFL. It's different. So I think that they just have to get Caleb to not do so much. I think Caleb's going to be great. I don't have any worry about him whatsoever. It's just tough early on as he gets adjusted. Bo Nix, I think he's going to be fine. I never had a high ceiling for him. I never thought he was going to be fantastic. I thought he's going to be a perfectly reasonable quarterback in a Sean Payton offense. And he still could get there. It's just really, really hard for right now. That team is not good. Broncos fans got really, really excited in the end of August, and I've given them a hard time because I made the joke, like, you know, it's hard for Bo Nix to play with a gold jacket that the, you know, Broncos fans fitted him for in August. I mean, it's just not happen. It doesn't happen that way for many rookies. And even Jaden Daniels, he's been perfectly good. Like, there's nothing wrong with him at all. But for the first 6-7 quarters of the season, they clearly said, just get rid of the ball. We don't want you throwing it downfield. So every pass he threw for really until the second half last week when he had to make plays was screen pass, 2 yards, 3 yards, you know, -1 yard behind the line of scrimmage. So that just kind of speaks to how Washington wanted to protect him behind a bad offensive line. I don't think he's playing out of his mind. I don't think he's playing great. I think he's been perfectly reasonable. I think he's going to continue to grow. I think the world of Daniels, I think he's going to be a heck of a player, but it's hard to play quarterback in the NFL as a rookie, and we're seeing that from pretty much everybody. It's just Jaden has kind of navigated it better than everybody else.
Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports, with us on Grant and Danny. Of these surprise, I put that in quotes, 2-0 teams. I mean, the Chargers played two bad teams, so they're 2-0, but I don't know how for real they are, but that's kind of the question here. Of these sort of surprise 2-0 teams, thinking the Chargers, Minnesota, and New Orleans, who has the best season?
I think the answer most people would give is New Orleans, but I might go Minnesota just because I have so much trust in our coaching staff. Aside from the guys in Kansas City, that might be the best coaching staff in the NFL right now, at least on a short list. I mean, John Harbaugh's great and all that, so I get it. But Kevin O'Connell clearly is just kind of a quarterback whisperer at this point. He's had Sam Darnold play at a level we haven't seen him play at consistently in his entire NFL career. And then Brian Flores, all the controversy around him and the Dolphins and the lawsuit and all that, he kind of gets lost that guy is a really, really, really good defensive coach. And you're seeing it. That San Francisco 49ers had 7 points through three quarters last week. That's because Minnesota's playing really well. I think they can keep this up. New Orleans, I don't know. I'm just having a hard time buying in. But the offense looks completely changed and different and great. I mean, they finally modernized the offense. You know, a new coordinator, Clint Kubiak, a lot of play action, a lot of pre-snap motion. Pretty much every cheat code you could have in the NFL, Clint Kubiak said, yeah, I'm just going to do that all the time. They're like, I think they're first in the NFL in pre-snap motion and in play action right now. And you can see Derek Carr looks comfortable. So I think they're going to be fine. But I don't think they're some 13-win team or anything like that. And then the Chargers, I'm just not buying yet. You beat the Raiders at home and you beat the Panthers, who are the 33rd best team in the NFL, because I can't even rank them 32 at this point. They're so bad. Like, they are. So what do I really take out of that? And even this week, you play a Pittsburgh team that has one touchdown in two games. They could easily be 3-0, and I'm going to be sitting here saying, I don't really think that much of the Chargers. But wins are wins, and it's great they're getting them.
You mentioned Seattle earlier as a team that you thought could be for real. I want to double-click on that. What does that look like? And here's why I ask. San Francisco, if you play there, you pretty much are on the injury report now, in addition to Debo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, who we know. Now George Kittle popped up on the injury report. So it's almost like, you know, San Francisco, you know, when they're healthy, they're good. Well, they're not healthy. So now what does that mean for that division, and how good is Seattle? Can they take advantage?
Yeah, and I still think San Francisco wins that division going away. I still think that they're going to be good enough to squeeze out wins while some of these guys get healthy. But, you know, they did go 0-3 without Debo Samuel last year. He is an integral part of what they do. I'm not saying I'm not saying Debo's a better player than Christian McCaffrey. I mean, Christian's obviously great. Offensive player of the year and all that. But I think Debo's harder to replace just because he has such a unique skill set that they do struggle to replace him, and they're going to struggle on offense when he's not there. Seattle is just kind of this work in progress that's winning games, but I see, anyway, the way I look at it, I see the progress. That offense is really different with Grubb coming over from University of Washington, and Geno Smith looks really comfortable, and I just think that defense is going to get better and better. I'm part of the Mike McDonald herd. I think he is. People have called him the Sean McVay of defense, and I'm kind of buying in on that. I think he might be. He's just a really, really smart defensive coach, and maybe a really good head coach for all we know. They're 2-0, and I think they're just going to keep getting better and better and better. There's a lot of talent on that Seattle team. I think that Seattle team can make the playoffs. Maybe not necessarily win a division, but be one of those, like, 10-win teams you really don't want to see in wild card weekend if you're the Cowboys or Eagles or whoever they end up drawing.
Frank Schwab is with us here on Grant and Danny, Yahoo Sports, joining us to break down week 3 of the NFL season. The last game we watched in primetime as we get ready for Thursday Night Football was that stunner where the Falcons knocked off the Eagles and nobody really saw it coming at the end. What do you make of those two teams? Philly, super uneasy first 2 weeks, could easily be 0-2. The Falcons had that dud against the Steelers and then stole one, could also be 0-2. They got the Chiefs this week, but ran the ball really, really well. And Cousins seemed to come to life a little bit. What do you think about those two clubs?
Yeah, it's hard to say because I don't like to change my opinion based on a really, really small sample. And we're really giving the Falcons a lot of credit for one drive. I mean, with a minute 30 left to go in the game or however long it was, Saquon Barkley has a pass that he catches 95% of the time. And if he catches that, what are we saying about the Atlanta Falcons right now? They're 0-2 with one touchdown in each of their first two games. But they had the drive, and maybe he can get some momentum off of that. Maybe he could get some confidence off of that. Kirk finally did look good, and he looked comfortable. And I don't know, though. I'm not willing to buy fully in, but I'll tell you this. As far as they go this week, the Chiefs have a lot of issues. The Chiefs are a team that could be 0-2. Look at how close their first two games were. I mean, I say likely barely out of bounds, and then a crazy defensive pass interference call that a lot of people don't even think was DPI on 4th and 16. They're that close to being 0-2 with Isaiah Pacheco out for a long time. Hollywood Brown's out for all the regular season, it looks like. We got Travis Kelce's not doing anything. Like that team's, in a little bit of trouble. Like as far, not trouble as far as not going to make the playoffs, but just can they play up to the Kansas City Chiefs level? I don't know that they can right now. They got a lot of injuries and a lot of stuff going on. So that's Atlanta. And then Philly, yeah, I don't know what to make of them. Again, if Saquon Barkley catches that pass, they're 2-0, and we're feeling pretty good about Philly, right? Yeah, you struggle a little bit to beat the Packers, but they're going to be good. You struggle a little bit to beat the Falcons, but they're not a terrible team either. So I don't want to change completely a turn on Philly based on one drop pass, pretty much. But, yeah, all the issues they had in the secondary and stuff kind of popped up when Kirk Cousins just sliced through them on that last drive. So I'm a little skeptical of the Eagles, but then again, I look at them going to New Orleans and say, why can't they beat New Orleans? This whole season has been weird. So, you know, the line moved for people who bet. That line moved 6 points from last week. It was Philly was favored by 3 in the look-ahead line, and now they're 3-point underdogs. What happened? Like, because Saquon Barkley dropped a pass? I don't know. So I think Philly's going to be fine, but they just might not be that Super Bowl type of team that they were 2 years ago.
Are the Lions still maybe, just nipping at the heels of the 49ers in terms of best teams in the NFC, or are we reeling a little bit after week two?
I still have faith in them. I mean, they outgained the Buccaneers 460-something to 218, I think it was. I might be a little bit wrong on my numbers there. It was one of those games where the better team didn't win. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Tampa Bay. Like you got it. You won the game. You came up with a clutch interception, of Goff in the fourth quarter and all that kind of stuff. But from play to play, Detroit really outplayed them. So I'm not freaking out too much about them. I still have a lot of faith in them. I think they're going to be really good. But now they go in and face an Arizona team who maybe that team is really good. Like, I didn't have any faith in their defense being good this season. I thought Arizona was going to lose a bunch of 38-35 games, but they throttled the Rams last week. And you look back at week one, first half, they did a really good job against Buffalo. So maybe that defense is better than I thought, and that team is going to be a surprise playoff team, Arizona. So of all the games this week, I'm most interested in, I think Detroit-Arizona could be fascinating. I think that could be a really, really entertaining up-and-down game, and we could, we might be coming out of that game saying, wow, Arizona's legit.
Frank, you are an award-winning prognosticator, all right? You don't want to pat yourself on the back, so I will. You've done some good things in the past, picking games among your peers. 6.5 is the line tonight. The Patriots are catching 6.5 at the Jets. What's your feel on that game?
A very, very tepid pick on the Jets. Because the problem, and I talked about it before, is a scheduling thing. Like, you play, again, at Monday night week one against a physical Rams team, on the road week two, and then the NFL is like, that's fine, you can play on Thursday night. Like, that is so unfair to them and so ridiculous, but I just think they're a better team. I'm not buying in on the Patriots being good. They played hard, they played well, hats off to them, but I'm still a little skeptical. And so I'll take the Jets -6.5, although big favorites on Thursday night is generally not my jam, but I'll go with it tonight.
I love the tepid pick. That is something I'm going to be using many times throughout the season. Frank, thank you, buddy.
You don't have to. Just remember, you don't have to take every single game on the board. You can pass a few of them. Yes.
That's a great point.
Yeah, well, we got to make our picks. I'm like, this one's tepid also.
Thanks, Frank.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks,
all right,
buddy.
Be good. There you go. Week three. You have now sat down. The table is set. We are ready to feast as we get ready for a kickoff in 3 hours here on The Fan. Next on G&D. Why is the line so big between Washington and Cincinnati? Does it feel right? 7.5-point underdogs at the Bengals. The Bengals are 0-2, and they lost in week one as the biggest favorites that week. What have they done to earn that? Let's get into that next on The Fan. Four days out from Monday Night Football, Commanders, Bengals. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Now, I don't think you and I see eye to eye on this, Hu-Hey, but I came in here today spitting some liquid hot magma, a little venom on this. I am, and I'm not doing shtick, I'm very surprised by this line. We don't really don't care a whole lot about betting lines on this show. I'm stunned that Washington is the biggest underdog in the NFL this weekend. I don't really get that. They're 1-1. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like they could be 2-0. They got waxed by the Bucs. Mm-hmm. I know their defense is no good. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe the odds makers are going, Joe Burrow's going to go ham sandwich. Ja'Marr Chase is going to get right. But by the way, the Bengals, they were better in game two, but they have not really looked like themselves throwing the football. Sounds like T. Higgins practiced today. Maybe he's trending toward playing, but it'll be the first time he played with Joe Burrow since last football season because he did nothing all offseason as he was holding out. It's not like they're just going to hit the ground sprinting. The total in the game is 47, so they think it's going to be, you know, wide open, I would say. Like, both teams are going to be able to make some plays. But 7.5 points is the line. If you look at some of the other games, the Panthers are only 5.5-point dogs against the Raiders this week, turning to Andy Dalton. The Bucs are 2-0. The Broncos can't, you know, get together in the huddle to go get a first down. It's like a scene out of the Little Giants. They're 6.5-point dogs. I think Washington catching 7.5 is super sexy. I don't know that they win. I don't think they do. In fact, I'm quite sure that they probably won't. But to if they lose by 7, I win the bet. I don't think this is a you know, 30-13 kind of game. The Bengals were the biggest favorite in football 2 weeks ago by the same odds makers and lost the game outright. And then they lost the game since, and their reaction is, let's make the Bengals the biggest favorites in the league this week. I think they're being overvalued.
Here's how we got there. I would have thought 5.5 was the spread.
That's about somewhere where I think it should be.
Right? So here's how we get there. I'm gonna do this is the thing that usually gets you into trouble, by the way, when you start talking about this. We used to have to do this with college football all the time before there's a BCS, before there's a playoff. You go, well, this team beat this team by this much, and then that team beat that team, and this team beat that team. Therefore, team number one is better than team number five. It's exhausting and stupid. But we only have a couple weeks, so here's how we got there. Cincinnati, yes, week one, they've done the Cincinnati week one thing. I think the odds makers are throwing that out. But not saying I agree, but I think that's what's happening.
You just get to do that? Do I get to throw out Commanders week one?
It'd be nice.
Okay.
But I think they're not acknowledging that how dreadful Cincinnati was in week number one. A million reasons why. One, they've got a history of it.
By the way, that's not like it was 7 weeks ago.
It's not last year.
50% of their sample on the year, and it was not even 2 weeks ago.
They have a pattern of starting terribly. They have a pattern of then business picking up. Usually it's a little bit later than this, but whatever. Number two is when their guys are right and healthy and have practiced a little bit, they are much better than a team, say, like Washington, which wasn't the case in week one, but might be the case now. And again, this is, I think, how we got here. I think they also go, Kansas City's pass defense is excellent. And they struggled last week, but that's a really good defense. And they probably had a great chance to win that game on the road against maybe still the best team in the NFL. So that's the Cincinnati perspective. The Washington perspective, here's what I see. You guys, the Giants are awful. The Giants are so terrible that anybody doing anything positive against them should be taken not with one grain of salt, but all the amount of salt that Harry throws over his shoulder at the bar where he hits Seabass with the salt shaker, and he comes over and hocks in the burger. All the salt.
Harry, I took care of it.
I took care of it. If that gentleman over there is Seabass, this is
basically... Poor Boilermakers.
Seabass said that? Yeah. If, to me, this is basically saying... Washington, the team Washington is the one that showed up in week one that can't do anything. That's a Jaden Daniels scramble or bust. And any decent defense, any decent offense will have their way with them. This will be a free-for-all, a carnival ride. Cincinnati gets right. Washington is embarrassed on Monday Night Football, and the world goes on. That's what this line is telling me they think.
I want to come back to this.
Okay.
But I think there's a very good chance that neither of our producers knows anything about Dumb and Dumber. So here's what we'll do.
I know Ryan doesn't.
Well, I know. But the sneaky one is going to sit there and pretend like he knows. And I bet you he's never seen it. So fire up some game show music, please, Darius, if you don't mind. Now, Ryan had never seen Dumb and Dumber, supposedly watched it within the last year, if I remember, because he was talking about how, it's terrible. You guys don't know what humor is. Your era is
so bad. Not another teen movie. 11 is the best.
So I'll start with Darius. What's your file on Dumb and Dumber?
You know, it's funny when he finished
stuttering right now,
because when he finished, you looked at me and I felt it.
Well,
I knew you were about to do this.
If I can explain this to the folks listening on the radio, I looked over at you, not because he was saying anything about Dumb and Dumber, but
because
just
I wasn't reacting.
No. Just naturally, like, oh, that's, you know, like your neck. You're literally in my line of sight. And you know what Darius did? His eyes beated the other direction. It was and that's how I knew.
Yeah. Guilty.
He is dodging this like he's a commander's defender that needs to make a tackle in the secondary.
Guilty body language.
Michael Davis.
Away. So with that said, have you seen Dumb and Dumber?
I think I have.
Oh, my God. That's the wrong answer.
I think I've seen it at some point.
What is Lloyd's last name?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay. Ryan, have you seen Dumb and Dumber?
Of course.
Of course?
Of course. I watched it because of you guys.
How many times?
Just once. It was dumb.
That's the point.
By nature. Yeah.
It just.
What is Lloyd's last name?
Cushenberry. LSU center.
Yeah.
What is Lloyd in Dumb and Dumber's last name?
No idea.
Danny?
Christmas. Now, the best part.
What is Harry's last name, gentlemen? I'm going to give you a hint.
Stamper?
A famous athlete.
You're pandering.
That's actually well done.
Yeah.
It's a famous athlete at LSU over the last couple of years.
And he's in a ring of fame, I believe.
Harry Dunn.
Yes.
Yes.
It is Harry Dunn.
Oh, I realized I gave a different hint.
You went
Livy. I was going Warwick, who's in the Ring of Fame.
Harry Dunn.
Hi, Harry Dunn.
Nice set
of Hooters you got
it
there.
It needs to be acknowledged.
The Owls.
That for two guys who trade comedic, movie, excellent comedy, funny zings, not on air or anything, but just all day long, you and I are going back and forth with like 90s comedies. No two people have ever appreciated the references less than the two people we work with all day, every
day. Yeah, the ratio of appreciation to people is very bad for us.
It is a low number. Yeah. Like if one day we should actually do this, and I don't know if today's the day or not, but we should come up with iconic movie quotes, great movie quotes from the 90s, early 2000s.
That's a great summer activity.
And just see how much they can get.
I know we always say write that down for like some sort of future thing. Like we should create some sort of spreadsheet somewhere where that goes. All-Star Week of 2025.
Next July.
Yeah. When it's just tumbleweed and what's the best topping for a nacho? Like when we're doing that. Let's do that.
I don't know that we do that, but.
Well, come on. Give us a call. What's the best topic for a nacho? Come on, guys.
That was the week that you were out. We did that, actually.
And we did that four times in 2 days.
Sorry I missed that.
So am I. I could have used somebody
Name
to talk
the
to.
Movie, okay? True love is hard to find. Sometimes you think you've found true love, and then you catch the early flight home from San Diego, and a couple of nude people jump out of your bathroom blindfolded like a magic show. I'm not going to finish it. What is the line? What movie is that line from?
Darius, you can go.
Anchorman.
Trying to make a point here, Frank. You don't have to celebrate it.
I've seen Anchorman. Anchorman is a great movie, for the record.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to guess, like, Dumb and Dumber.
Ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case. Back to what we were talking about.
That's your next little Saturday.
The Washington Commanders and the Cincinnati Bengals, Daniel. This is not about the Commanders. I'm not pretending like the Commanders are really, really good, Danny. I'm not. I saw Tampa game like you did.
Mm-hmm.
I know they just beat the Giants and they had major flaws. And if Malik Nabers makes a catch or Graham Gano doesn't pull his groin or any of the other stuff that happened didn't happen, they probably are 0-2 with a loss to one of the worst five teams in the league. Yes. Are the Bengals that good? Should the Bengals be favored by the biggest number of the week as a winless outfit that hasn't gotten right offensively? And you're like, well, you know, they're trending in the right direction. Remember how this exact same thing happened with their offense last year?
The Bengals.
When they finally got their offense going?
It was like 4 or 5.
It was like 5.
Yeah.
It took a month for them to get going. And I'm supposed to expect that T. Higgins is just going to be dropped in like it's a claw machine and he just immediately goes out and goes 8 for 107? No chance. Now, could Ja'Marr Chase go absolutely bananas? Sure. If you tell me right now he goes 15 targets, 12 catches, 171 or something, I would go, I can see that.
Yeah, probably.
But 7.5, man, it just seems like a lot to me.
There is a And listen, this isn't gospel, right? We all know how we get here, right? They're trying to get people to bid on, or bid, I'm sure, to bet on both sides.
No bid.
They're trying to bid. What's your item for bid for the football games? Whatever.
Am I alone in saying I think this is a close game? Am I in? I know I'm in the minority, it sounds like, but I think this is a one possession decided in the mid to late fourth quarter kind of game. You disagree with that?
Most you think, in other words, it falls into the standard deviation of football games. Not like Tampa, where there was no chance late in the
Which
game.
Which is to say it shouldn't be the biggest line of the week.
Right. So this, to me, reeks of one thing. Not necessarily about Cincinnati, it's about Washington. It's about this is what it says to me. Whether it's right or not, obviously time will tell. I mean, they get these things wrong all the time. But what it says is, anything positive you guys are seeing with Washington is completely fraudulent because of how bad the Giants are. That's how I read that. Whether you agree or not, I think that's what they're saying.
You get nothing for having the best playmaker, supposedly, in the game. I mean, the conversation in town is Daniels is an equalizer, right? I mean, we had Earl on the show earlier doing updates, and he was talking about like the gap between him and Burrow not being huge. Now, I'll disagree with that, but I think his point is based on Joe Burrow's health. But I don't know, man. I think that while Washington is not that good and Cincinnati is very good, they're not playing like it right now. This should be a 4.5 or a 5.5 point line. And I'll put my money where my mouth is. Not a lot of it. Very little of it.
How many units are going down?
This will be a one unit play.
Okay.
The unit's gotten smaller this year, by the way.
We don't judge that, though.
No, we're not unit chambers.
We never unit chamber on the show.
We have never, ever once unit chamber.
That's your special unit.
I've lowered the unit. We're going to go one unit play on the Commanders plus 7.5. I think it's a tight game. In fact, I'm going to look like a fool.
Uh-oh.
Do not save this audio.
Oh, no.
When I say this, Darius, I want you to let this go into the ether and never play it again. I actually think there's a chance they beat the Bengals.
Can we get that played?
I really do. I think there is a chance that the Commanders beat the Bengals in Cincy on Monday night.
Huh.
Jaden makes a couple of plays with his feet, runs around a little bit. The nationally televised audience is talking about him as the rookie of the year on Tuesday. I could absolutely see that.
Ryan, remember that little voice in your head sometimes? You know who's hearing that voice right now? Lil Grant is.
Honestly, I am.
Grant's got that voice.
I don't think they're good. Everyone's going to, you're overrating the Commanders. I'm not. It's one game against a team that I think is flawed, that has not played well yet. And I'm not ready to crown the Bengals. You guys want to crown them? Crown them. I'm not ready to do that just yet. I'm not playing the Chiefs, who just beat them when they didn't even play well, by the way, this weekend. I'm not playing a good team like the Saints. I'm not playing a great quarterback like Derek Carr. That's a bit. But I'm not ready to crown
them. Actually, I was like, wait, what?
You're just staring at me like, where's he going with this?
Yeah, I was like, I thought I had a zing ready.
But I do think the Bengals are, because of their offseason and everything going on and the turmoil, and they got receivers that want to be paid that are mad. It's not right that they are not passing the smell test, and neither is the line. Grant Sheehan.
Look at you, Homer Simpson, over there. Look at you writing the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Who's going with me? That's what I want to know.
Look at you.
Who's ready to lock
arms? You talked yourself from close game into their winning.
No, I said it would not surprise me.
I know, I'm doing bits.
I think my prediction right now is 27-23, Bengals. But I don't. If you're telling me they win or they lose 30-10, I think they win.
Dude.
I don't think they get worked on Monday night. You do?
I do.
800-636-1067 is the number. Grant and Danny on the Fan. So I just confessed to Danny that I don't really understand why the Commanders are underdogs to the extent that they are this weekend. I'm acknowledging that they're not that good. I just think the Bengals are being put on an undeserved pedestal as an 0-2 outfit that has not really played that well. I've watched both of their games this week. I've seen them in their entirety in a pretty dreadful performance at home, the only time they've been at home, by the way, against a team they were bigger favorites against and lost the game outright. That was just a couple weeks ago. And this past week, they played pretty well. They could have beat the Chiefs, who didn't play particularly well, and they still lost that game. I don't see this as a Cincinnati destroying Washington situation, an embarrassing Monday night. They've got 30-plus, you've got 10 or fewer kind of night. I think it's a one-possession game decided in the fourth quarter, and I would roll with Washington catching points. I want to know if anybody's with me. Jim's in Haymarket on Grant and Danny. What's up, Jim?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's up, well, bro.
Excellent. Grant, I'm with you. I think they're going to win 28-17.
Whoa.
I think they're going to work out. I mean, outside of the red zone, they have been moving the ball. And I think they're going to get these things worked out where they're not going to jump off sides, and I think they're going to move on it. And honestly, Cincinnati hasn't really impressed me at all this year at all. So I think that's it. And I think Daniels is just going to – I think he's going to shine this game.
What about this? Thanks, Jim.
Appreciate you.
Danny, this is our first Jaden Daniels in primetime situation.
Yes, it is.
Anybody ever watch him in big games at LSU? He got worse, right? He didn't play his best football, right? He struggled in those games. Alabama, Florida, you know, the rivals in the SEC. Oh, wait, I'm being told in my ear. He always excelled and was monstrous and just thrived in those situations. We love Jaden Daniels, don't we? We think he's the real deal. Everyone's ready to throw him in the Hall of Fame before he throws his first touchdown, yeah? He can't go out and play a hell of a football game? I bet he can. This was Jaden Daniels today.
I mean, it's special, obviously, be able to play one this early. Just coming off my first actual game, the first home opener, now first Monday night game. So it's going to be special, but at the end of the day, it's another game. He's just playing later on in the week.
Let's go to Braden in Silver Spring on G&D. What's up, Braden?
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, so I am going to go ahead and go against Grant here. I don't really see a way that we play it tight. I mean, you know, Jaden Daniels versus Joe Burrow, you know, two LSU Heisman Trophy winners. I love the storyline. I love how cool that could all be. But at the same time, you know, this is as big of a get-right game as any for the Bengals, I feel like. You know, they just played the Chiefs really tight. Chiefs are Super Bowl contenders, winners every year. I feel like our floor is kind of like that Giants, or our ceiling, rather, at this point, is kind of like that Giants game where everything just kind of has to go right for us. And given, you know, Jaden might ball out a little bit, but, like, look at what the Giants were able to not do and still be in that game. I think the Bengals, you know, given if T. Higgins plays, I mean, they're going to light us up, light our defense up. I just don't know how we keep it close.
So here's where I get a little crazy, Danny.
Okay.
T. Higgins playing might actually be better. And here's why. Again, zero timing, no work at all with Burrow until this week. Another mouth to feed. Like, they have a couple weeks of trying to figure this thing out with Ja'Marr Chase and Mike Gesicki, who led them a tight end last week, 7 catches for 91 yards. But now if they incorporate T. Higgins, now it's another guy who's basically going through a preseason game on the field. I actually think that could work to Washington's benefit, maybe. Maybe I'm insane. Because their secondary is horrendous, and they can't cover Ja'Marr Chase, and they can't cover T. Higgins. And so both of them on the field are two guys they can't cover, and maybe that's worse. But I've just now, for 2 straight years, seen the Bengals start like this, and it generally, last year, took about a month. We're halfway there. They played a lot better against Kansas City, no doubt. There was only one way to go, because they played awful against New England.
They really did. They were atrocious, and there was all the drama that led up to it, and it's still not all totally solved. This is their get-right week. That's what they're talking about in Cincinnati. I'm just saying. I mean, whether they're right or not, that's the discussion.
That's fair. I mean, their season is maybe not on the line, but you can't go 0-3.
Right.
They're 0-2, and they know that an 0-3 start would be devastating, so they are in a lot of ways playing for their year, which is scary, for sure. Vic and Akakeek, what's good?
What's up, guys?
Hey, man.
So, turnovers and touchdowns, PTs. We haven't scored a lot of touchdowns yet. I'm not a big Vegas guy that seemed to know all about Vegas, but I would assume that would drive prognosticators to say the line is going to be shorter and because the Commanders have the ability to score more points. And we haven't gotten a lot of turnovers. And turnovers, theoretically, people think lead to or would expect the more turnovers you get, going to lead to points that could lead potentially to touchdowns. We haven't done that either. So that's why I think the line is bigger. And I'll say this, add a little football in it. I was saying with you all the other day that I feel like the formations are too tight. The reason I believe that is because teams are starting to figure out this X come down, slot guy bubble out, screen play. And they're starting to attack it and attack it to the point where it puts it sometimes in down and distance. I think we could give our chance more chances, opportunities to score if we actually spread our formations out and use our weapons in better situations. Which, if we had done that the first 2 weeks, we might have a shorter line against the Bengals right now.
You know what, to that point, Vic, you know what I want to see? Appreciate the call,
thanks,
bro,
buddy.
As always. So they've done so much of the horizontal sideways stuff behind the line, the wide receiver screens, the RPOs. I want to see them hit on one of those that's just like a beautiful look where you've got two receivers, you know, out, let's just say flanked to the left or whatever. And whoever's in the slot or closer to the quarterback kind of drifts out backwards and toward the sideline for a bubble. And you set up to throw that screen so everybody bites, and the other guy runs almost like he could run a fade or a go ball if it's the outside receiver or whatever, down the sideline. But you see that. When it's executed, it's one of the prettiest plays in football. Like, you fake the screen, they bite up, and then they get behind the defender. To his point, everyone's going to be sitting outside on these short passes sooner than later. And I would imagine this week. Again, I don't want to beat this stat into the ground, but wide receivers for Washington targeted almost 40% of the time behind the line of scrimmage. The league average is 11%.
That's a trend. People can start to sit on that a little bit.
So at some point, you got to turn that into something that surprises.
You
got
to offer the counter to that.
And maybe that happens this weekend. Speaking of how teams are covering offenses, there was a discussion today on ESPN that was pretty interesting about cover two, the idea of like the two deep safeties. And there are analysts that actually want it outlawed. Like, we're getting rid of the shift in baseball so that it's easier to move the football. What do we think about that? We'll get to that next on The Fan.